evening and welcome to episode 102 of season 11 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Tierney Steele of One Steele Sister. Welcome back to the show for yet another season, Tierney.
Hello, hello. Yes, previous listeners to your show will recognize my voice and the fact that I've done 7 million podcasts and never know where to say I'm from. So yeah, onestealsister.com is my website that has everything on it. So I'm like, just say that.
Okay, perfect. That's the way it works. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Okay, so episode 102 begins with Webster getting ready to leave the house and ends with Webster doing a solid. So let's start with my opening question for all of my guests. What is your background with Band of Brothers?
I am trying to remember when exactly I first watched Band of Brothers. It would have been post-college because this came out when I was in my undergrad, college, getting my bachelor's, and I was a military history major, and every guy I knew was obsessed with this show and was like, it's the best, you've got to see it. And I didn't have HBO, so I was like, I don't know. And I saw literally the 5 minutes around Malarkey going to the laundry after D-Day. Like, that was it. That was all I knew about this. And I was like, I mean,
right, that's the end of part three.
Yeah, it. I was like, this seems exactly in my wheelhouse. I'm definitely going to watch it. And then I just kind of never got around to watching it for a few years. So it was sometime in my 20s when I was like, oh yeah, Band of Brothers, I need to see that. And then it was like, and now I must watch The Pacific. And now I must watch, you know, I had been obsessed with From the Earth to the Moon. So like, all right, I am ready for another one of these, basically. and the latest one, when they did, what is it, Masters of the Air. I remember people being like, did they sit in a room and try and think of, like, what would Tierney like in a show? So I was like, all right, I love this. And I love that this section starts, a little shout out for the quartermasters of the world. When I worked at a summer camp, I was a quartermaster one summer, and so I get to explain what a quartermaster is on my resume for the rest of my life.
Why not?
It is not a term that comes up normally in the library world or the retail world or corporate, but yeah, I always make sure it's on there because it was, you know, it was like the biggest role I had. It was, you know, my grown-up job of summer camp. And yeah, it's also a nice like talking point because everyone's looking at like, what is a quartermaster? And I'm like, it's the person in charge of supplies. And, you know, I never had a wounded ass, so at least that was going for me. But yeah, when he's trying to distribute things, I was like, oh, I'm so sorry for you.
Okay, I completely can understand that, and we will be discussing that, no question about that. All right, so basically we left things off. These guys are all in a commandeered house in the middle of the town, basically trying to figure out how to stay safe. And you know, we have these quote unquote two newbies, which one is really a newbie and one is not. You have Lieutenant Jones, who is basically just in from West Point. And you also have Webster, who came back from the hospital. And everyone is treating him as if he's a brand new guy because of the way that he basically is acting like an idiot. That's more like what it comes to. You know, everyone doesn't understand why he never came back. And, you know, at the beginning when he's starting to ask, go, hey, what about Hubler? And they're like, no, he's not here. And what about Garnier? He's not here. You know, because you weren't here, all these guys got injured. You know, so. Well, again, not Hubler. Hubler did that to himself.
But yeah. You know. it's a little, Both sides are at fault. They're being a little too harsh on him, I think. He's also not reading the room at first. Like, he thinks he's gonna drop right back in as if no time has passed.
Correct.
And they put him in his place very quickly. And Lieutenant Jones is put in his place very quickly.
Yeah, because again, it's the whole idea that everyone knows the war is coming towards ahead. Whether it's really going to end shortly or not, they don't know. But it's getting closer, or it's rapidly getting closer. They can feel that. And Jones, and we'll see this later. I think it's in part nine. With O'Keefe, that they're these guys that are just in from, and they want to have that little bit of action before everything ends. That type of thing. Which in some ways you can't blame them, but on the other hand, we've seen the crap that everyone's gone through, and we're like, yeah, stay away from that too. Yeah. This might be something you don't want. You might want to be this action hero and be a part of everything that's going on, but on the other hand, try and stay a little safer. That type of thing.
I think Jones does a real Colin Hanks does a really good job with this role of balancing that he is the newbie, he is the wide-eyed kid. He's one of the few people who actually looks young enough to be in World War II. But at the same time, like, it's not his fault. I don't put him in the same category as like those older guys who wanted to get off a desk or get their combat points so that they could be promoted or whatever. Because, he just graduated. Like, that's not his fault. That's the age he is. But yeah, this whole pairing of Jones and Webster together, like the college boy, the college boys basically.
Yeah, no, very true. Yeah.
But yeah, and we'll get there in the briefing scene. I love that, like, Webster very much like go tries to go over and be one of the guys. And is like, I'm not with him.
Exactly. No, I mean
But anyway,
it's interesting.
we're
I
not there
mean,
yet.
just last week I had my interview with the writer of this episode, Eric Bork, and he was talking about the fact of why he chose to use Webster and Jones. Originally, he wanted to have completely new guys that no one didn't even know. And so anyone who missed that should go back and listen to episode 97. When I spoke to the writer of this part, because he really gives a lot of fascinating insight into a lot of the decisions that he made along the way.
Nice. Well, I hope you told him, because obviously that episode has not aired yet, so I didn't hear it. The conversation between Jones and Winters and Spears, and the little, like, stone cold, absolutely the other guy can go on the raid, but he can't, like, it just, and Winters, like, he almost rolls his eyes, like, it is a thing of beauty.
Yes.
Like, it is so well written, well acted, well done, of just like, I can't be me. It's not your fault. I get why you're saying this, but also,
No.
no, go away.
That's right. But that's
So good. I
but
literally
I mean
wrote, I was like,
we are jumping ahead of ourselves, but that is Winter's personality. Winter is there to care for all of his men. It doesn't matter who they are. And even this new guy that he doesn't know at all, he still wants to care for him and wants to make sure that everyone eventually gets home safely. So I mean, I do like the way that Damon Lewis plays this character in a way that we always can see that as far as he's concerned, first and foremost comes the men and their safety, and then after that, comes the mission and stuff like that, which is shown really well. I like the way that they show that to us. And so here we have the men standing in this room getting ready, and Luz is talking to Jones, and Webster's carrying a box of goodies. And where are we going? He goes, to the house I got a blast. And at this point, Jones looks at him and goes, Captain Winter's going to be with him? And he goes, Jesus, look, I don't know, maybe. He goes, then I'm coming too. All right, come on, guys, please. He goes, take it easy. I've been here all f***ing day. And, you know, the whole idea is that we have, you know, Vest in the background where he's got all of his supplies. You know, you were talking before about the quartermaster stuff and stuff. And everyone is just trying to get whatever they can out of his, mm-hmm. you know, out of his goodies. And, you know, he also is interested in making sure that he gets to do something here also. You know, so he's, you know, and these guys just want chocolate bars. And, you know, we can see that there are some Baby Ruths and things like that. So, you know, it makes sense. I mean, this entire series has, in my opinion, too many scenes of soldiers with chocolate. I think there's like four, which is a lot. You have one where, you know, Webster gives a candy bar to little Dutch kid. You have the part with the nurse, you know, with Renee, mm-hmm. where she's giving Doc Rowe chocolate. You have this, and there is another scene. I'm trying to remember what it is.
Yeah.
But there is another chocolate scene somewhere along the way. And I'm like, okay. Yeah.
I think that's because it's in everyone's memoir. Like, I remember reading, you know, everyone who got rescued from behind the Iron Curtain, everyone who lived through, you know, I'm thinking specifically in like Germany, like people who were part of the Berlin airlift and stuff. Everyone is like, oh yeah, Americans, chocolate. That's like what they're most associated with, I think, in the mind of people who lived through that. No, my favorite line of this is when he's like, you don't even smoke cigarettes, damn it. Like, I mean, hey, trade is trade, but I just love the exasperation of like, oh, come on.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, as they're trying to loot the stuff, as you just pointed out, I'm supposed to watch these things. He says, you don't, and he takes a pack of cigarettes. You don't even smoke cigarettes, damn it. Because, come on, I got a wounded ass.
Yeah, it's such a good, like, such again, a good exchange.
There are way too many guys that get shot in the ass in this series too. You know, apparently it's all based on truth. So
mm-hmm.
I guess that is a target that the Germans were always aiming for. You know, let's see how many men we can shoot in the ass. You know. And then the shot changes as Webster and Jones follow Luz outside, and we see, you know, them looking across the river. We have Winters and Spears, you know, standing there. Spears mm-hmm. is using binoculars to see what's going on, and Winters goes, "Intelligence give you any information on the CP?" He goes, "Third house on the left." All right, as soon as our men are back in their boats, I want a quad 50 opening up. And at this point, Jones comes in and interrupts and goes, "Captain Winters, about to patrol. I feel that I should go on the patrol, sir. I know I could use the experience." Winters looks at him and goes, "Denied. Anything else?" "You're not going to lead the patrol, Lieutenant Jones." And then we hear explosions in the background. And then Jones goes, "Permission to speak, sir." "Go on, Lieutenant." He goes, "Well, it looks like Sergeant Malarkey could use a break, sir. I discussed it with him, and he said that he didn't mind if I took his place on the patrol." "Well, that was really nice of him." And he goes, "Well, but Captain Winters." "Yes." "I'd really like to be on the patrol, sir. If it's true the crops are finished, I haven't really done anything except deliver mail and type morning reports." That's Vest who's asking to go on that,
mm-hmm.
you know. He says, "You know, I really don't want to be a part of it." And Winters looks at him and goes, "Absolutely." He goes, "Thank you, Captain." And this really pisses off Jones as much as possible. Because, you know, he's pleading and he's being told, no. And here you have, you know, the quartermaster wants to go. And he's like, "Yeah, sure, no problem."
Yeah. Yeah, this is where Damian Lewis's, like, sigh that doesn't actually leave his body when Jones asks for permission to speak. And Colin Hanks is screaming that doesn't actually leave his body when Winter says absolutely is just masterful acting on both their parts. Because you see it. You see them repressing what they actually want to do.
That's right. Yes, you can see that Jones is definitely biting his tongue as Vest is asking this question.
Oh, and shout out to my man Spears, a.k.a. Rufus from Gossip Girl. I'm sure one of your guests has to have brought that up by now.
Of course. But to me, he'll always be Spears. You know, I've never seen him on Gossip Girl, so I couldn't tell you, what he's like on that. But
it's very much a weird trip going back and forth between the two.
Okay. Okay, but I mean, Spears, he's great as Spears. There's no question about mm-hmm. that.
Oh yeah.
Right. And then Spears and Winters start having their own side conversation. And Spears goes, "Well, he's got a point about Sergeant Malarkey." He goes, "Yeah, a point." And he looks at him and goes, "Fine, you can go. There'll be a briefing at the CP at 1700. Jones says, "Yes, sir." Now Jones doesn't realize that. They're letting him go, but they're not really letting him go, type of thing.
Mm.
You know, he's expecting to be the one who's going to be leading everyone, and that he's doing a favor for Malarkey. But
he is replacing Malarkey in his head.
Right, exactly.
Not in Winters' head.
That's right. And then Spears just brings it up and goes, "So who do you think? Who do you have in mind leading this thing, if not Malarkey?" So, we can tell right away that, we're sure about the fact that Jones will not be leading it, but Jones mm-hmm. will, they're going to let him go, but Jones doesn't know that they're having this conversation saying, "Okay, so who's going to lead it instead?" And then mm-hmm. The shot goes back inside and, we see Jones just standing there. And one of the
staging of this is brilliant.
Yeah.
And then, so good.
For sure. And then one of the soldiers goes, "Come on, he can't be leading." And I'm not sure what they decided. "No way. Not on his first day. Well, have you seen the other officer here?" "What?" And, at this point, a group of other guys show up. And, the way that they're sort of talking behind his back, but they're talking behind his back in front of him. They're like,
mm-hmm.
I can't. They're basically all saying, "I can't believe that they're going to be sending us. They're going to be having us go on this patrol with him as the lead. This is a guy mm-hmm. who doesn't know anything yet. So how could they do that to us?"
And Webster's just standing there like, "I'm one of the guys."
Right. True. It's true the way that he's, waiting and hoping that everyone will. Will begin to try and accept him a little more,
mm-hmm.
even though it takes a while. And then a lot of the other guys show up, and Cobb says, "So who's in charge of this bullshit?" And they look over at Jones, and he goes, "No, he ain't." "Well, if he ain't, it's you, Chuck, or Shifty, or Mo. Well, they'd be better." And then Winters shows up and Jones goes, "Turn up." You'd think that at this point there would be a little less military bravado at this point for them, where they need to. I mean, I know that obviously when it comes to, military protocol, this is what you need to do. But it also mm-hmm. shows the difference between someone like Jones and all of them. They're in they've been in a combat situation for what is it, 8 months at this point, 9 months. And, he's just in from the States. He's from, he was in West Point where this is what they train you. They train you with the protocol. They train you what you need to do. The rest of them.
This was the first thing I learned when I was taking my classes in military history. I took them with the Air Force ROTC.
Mm-hmm.
And literally the only thing I had to learn to do was how to stand up and come to attention when the instructor entered the room, and the cadet in charge like called the room to attention.
Exactly.
Like
Again,
that, even as a civilian, it's like you have to stand up next to your desk. Like that's just what happens when the lieutenant colonel enters the room.
okay, and again, I think that's fair when you're in a classroom setting. When
Yes.
you're
Yes.
here, it's a little different.
Yeah.
Slightly different. And nobody says anything to Jones about it because they're all aware that this is theoretically what they should be doing according to protocol. And if they were in a formal situation, and no
Yes.
one's like, "Oh,
And I
come on, what
love
are you doing that?"
like, yeah, I love like they start to they respond. Like they have been trained. Like when someone says that, their body is like automatically start to respond. And Winters is the one who immediately says at ease. And they don't just like they don't stand at ease. They don't like sit down, but standing up. They go right back to like legs over the arms of the chairs or
Exactly.
up on the table. I mean, Winters, I like that he immediately is like, no, we're not doing that. Don't worry.
Exactly. Because it's also Winters is not Sobel. Sobel, if they were here, would still be,
Oh,
making
God.
sure that
Yes.
they abide by protocol and stuff like that. I mean, I still
For
remember
sure.
when I was in the Army, even after basic training, the commander still, was always wanted everything to be formal and stuff like that, and it drove us nuts because all the other platoons around us didn't have to do it, but we had to do it. That's everything just because of who your commander is. But again, that's part of the quote unquote game. There is the whole idea. I mean, let's put it this way: there is a method to the madness as to why there is this protocol. They don't want everything just to go off on the sides. That's the whole idea. I mean, we've seen this throughout the whole thing. Even Winters, he's constantly shaving when all these other guys are in Bastogne with scruffy looking beards. Nobody's saying anything to them that they shouldn't be doing it, but Winters himself is shaving in cold water in ice in order to make sure that he stays presentable and does what protocol asks him to do. Even if he won't make sure he won't force his men to do it, he still forces himself to do it and feels that he's not necessarily doing his proper duty if he doesn't do these things. So I like the way that they constantly keep showing that. And as you said, Winters walks in the room. He comes in with Spears and with Martin, and everyone basically sits down around the table, as you said, with their feet on the table. Very, very at ease. And then Winters says, "Gentlemen, sir." He goes, "As you can see, we've assembled 15 of you here for the prisoner snatch tonight at 0100. Just a couple of points. We've secured four rubber boats to get you across the river. Lieutenant Jones here is the ranking officer, and he'll be along as an observer." And you just have to look at Jones's face when he says that, because this takes him also a little bit by surprise. Because Jones has, as we
This
said,
is the first he's hearing of
that's
it.
right. That's right.
It's so smart because as an observer, like that, it makes sense. It's like, okay, you're the ranking officer, but this guy who's below you is actually in charge.
Well, again, because we want someone who knows what they're doing. There, it's the whole idea of the difference between book smart and street smart. Martin has been doing these type of things, throughout Europe or wherever they've been. So he knows how to do these things, but Jones just learned about them in a classroom and doesn't necessarily have the right panache to properly do it, not 100% by the book if needed, that type of thing. So, and then he continues and goes, "Sergeant Martin here will lead the patrol in Sergeant Malarkey's place." So basically, Martin got screwed from this whole thing. That's what it comes down to. And he goes, "The whole battalion will be covering your withdrawal. We've identified targets. We've planned fire for them. We hear these whistles. We open up," and he shows the whistles. "So don't blow them until you're back in the boats with your prisoners." And then one of the guys goes, "And if the house turns out to be empty, sir, It won't. But in any case, we know it's an outpost and we want it destroyed. So you have to lay some demo on a time delay. You have to move fast but carefully. Put a perimeter around the house. Once that's in place, get your rifle grenades in the first floor window. Get your assault team in quick. Okay? Good? Understood? Remember, it's about prisoners. Don't pop the first thing that moves. Clear? And everyone in unison goes, yes, sir. He goes, good. And then he turns to Martin and goes, have you picked your assault team? Which this line reminds me from Return of the Jedi. You know, when they
oh yeah, yeah.
When they say General Solo.
Oh, I didn't make that connection.
General Solo.
Yeah.
Well, I've got my team together, but I don't have a command crew yet.
Sergeant Martin Harrison Ford moment right here.
There you go. And Martin goes, McClung, Sisk, Cobb, Garcia, and Webster as translator. The rest of you guys are base fire with Sergeant Grant. And then Martin looks over to Webster and goes, you speak German, right? And he goes, yeah, a little bit. He goes, good. All right, that's my team, sir. And then Winter says, questions? No, sir. Good. Good luck. Thank you, sir. And then Jones has to do it again. He goes, 10, huh? And... You know, within a fraction of a second, Winters goes, as you were, carry on.
Yep. And Jones's face as he leaves is just like, I'm a mother and I just want to hug him like, oh, baby boy, no. Like, and he knows he's embarrassing himself. And yet he just can't seem to stop.
Right.
I do not remember what the beef is between Sergeant Martin and Webster, because they clearly like hate each other.
No, Martin is upset about the fact that Webster didn't come back right away. Webster got injured in October, and this is I think February, and you know a bunch of other guys did what they could to to escape the hospital and make it back to the Easy Company. And
and he thinks Webster could, yeah.
Yeah, because Webster basically said, yeah, I was in the hospital, and then I was in rehab, and then, you know.
Oh, right. So, oh, God, I'm trying to think of what the term is for that, for someone who slacks off and just stays in the hospital as long as possible. I'm blanking on it, but there was a term that was used.
We can just call it a Webster.
Okay, because I was trying to remember, like, if they didn't get along, like, back in basic or something, like,
no,
was
no,
there
no.
something,
never,
like,
they never showed that,
you know,
no, there wasn't anything that happened.
Something that didn't seem like a big deal, but every time you get a chance to knock the other guy, you're gonna sort of thing.
Yeah, no, there wasn't enough stuff going on with, I mean, Martin has been predominantly shown. But Webster was in like one or two episodes where they showed him doing some stuff, but nothing major. And there was no beef between the two of them.
Okay.
That I recall. Okay. I don't believe that there was anything. There. Yeah.
Okay. Because, yeah, this whole like, again, I'm not totally on the platoon side in this, because like, yes, you can say like, okay, well, Martin came back quicker, and these other guys, like one of the guys literally is like, I escaped the hospital to come back, sort of deal. All right, fine, you can say that, but like this attitude that they are giving him, this whole talking about Webster as if he weren't literally 6 inches to your right, Liebgott, thank you, sir, like it's a bit much. Like, y'all guys got a stick up your butt or something. Like, what is going on? Like, this attitude is, it's too much. And I know it's for the sake of the story, obviously. Like, before people, like, put away your angry letters that you're about to send to Rob. Like, I know why they are treating him like this. It just is a bit much. And at the end here, we're like, oh yeah, he tries to get out of everything. And I'm like, have we ever seen any example of that?
No.
Other than when he came back at the beginning of this episode?
Exactly. We have not seen that.
So, yeah, that was, I don't know. That was my thing, and I'll let you take us through the end of this episode, and then I will gush over my WB stars that are here in this
Right. I mean,
episode
one of the things,
before we wrap up.
right. Well, I mean, one of the things also is that as far as these guys are concerned, when you know they lost a lot of their men who were either injured or killed while they're in Vestone, and you know any one more person wouldn't have hurt, you know, from that perspective. You know, so I think that's part of their beef with him at this point.
Yeah. If they were treating him like a new guy, but they seem to be actively like, I'm gonna screw you. I
Well,
don't know.
again, it's I'm gonna screw you because you've screwed us for the last 4 months because we needed more men. We needed the manpower, and you weren't here. You know, you were you know.
You were eating in a hospital.
Exactly. You were spending time in the hospital. Now, what I find very interesting is I'm assuming you've seen Platoon, right?
Oh, not in a long
Okay,
time, but
so the
yes.
whole idea is that everyone hates Chris before he gets injured. And then he gets injured, is goes to the hospital, and then he comes back, and then now everyone, you know, half the guys start liking him. You know, and they because you know, he's I guess you know, he has his battle scars and stuff like that, but he's now come back. You know, I think that's also part of it. And so it's the exact opposite here.
Yeah. Maybe that's what's throwing me, where I'm like, this is not the usual dynamic when someone
Right,
returns.
exactly. But again, you know, you had someone like Garnier who returned, and you know, the first thing Garnier says when he comes back is, you know, any of you guys hear about that whorehouse that I can go to in Paris? Like, okay. That's a little odd that that's the first thing he's going to say when he gets you know when he escapes from the hospital. You know, but whatever. That was it was an obscure comment that later on, you know, when he's talking about the fact that he's got VD, and you know, you just have to make that connection between the two. You know, then eventually he found the place that he was looking for, I guess. So, but that was Garnier, I guess. You know, makes me wonder what Garnier's family thought about that little part of the whole thing. I mean, I did speak to his son, but I didn't bring that up. I didn't ask him what do you think about the fact of what, you know, them giving your father VD? You know, he might have said to me, "Well, it's true." I don't know. And you know, after Winters walks out of the room, so Liebgott, you know, whispers and goes, "A little German." He goes, "His German's just as good as mine." So basically, both Liebgott and Webster are translators. They both know German quite well. So it makes sense for them to allow you know to make Webster the their interpreter. For the whole thing, and then the shot changes, and we're back outside, and we get to see what these guys are all dealing with, you know, as they're getting ready. I mean, you see that they have to, you know, run across the street really quickly wherever they need to go. Did you notice that there's a sign in English behind them? Do you happen to read what it said?
No, I
Okay,
didn't.
so it says, "You are now under enemy observation. Minimize exposure." Basically saying, stay as covered as possible. And you know, then they start, you know, Webster starts moving across the way, and you know, a bunch of guys are talking here, and you know, we see that as Webster leaves, one of the guys goes, "Hey Jackson, you need this?" And he you know, he gives him some ammo for him to take, and then he goes, "Thanks." And one of the guys goes, "Can you believe that guy? Webster tries to get out of everything." He goes, "Whatever." And then you know, Webster, who is basically the fly on a wall here, gets to hear the officers discussing things, and he hears, all right, I want 4 men on each block. 4 men to go in, 4 men on the left flank, 4 men on the right. And then Webster interrupts them and goes, sir. Winters goes, yes. He goes, Liebgott and I, we both speak German. And as he says that, that's where this 5-minute segment ends. So we do see that, mm-hmm. that Webster, just like Jones, wants to do his duty and wants to help someone else out at the same time. And, you know, we'll have to wait until tomorrow to find that out completely how that works.
Yeah.
So did you have anything else you wanted to add about this particular 5-minute segment?
No, I just was going to shout out the fact I said Spears was Rufus on Gossip Girl, which was a CW show. Mm-hmm. Before the CW was that, it was the WB, which is what I grew up watching, okay. teen, mm-hmm. you know, primetime soap operas on. And I find it hilarious that both Lieutenant Jones and Webster were very key players on WB shows. So Colin Hanks' big break before this had been playing Alex Whitman on Roswell. And I mean, like, no, other than that, I remember being one of the only people who knew who he was when Orange County came out because I had watched Roswell. And then, is it Ian Bailey? Is that how you say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think it's Ian Bailey, yeah.
Ian Bailey, who I always recognize as the boyfriend from Center Stage. Obviously, you know, that masterpiece, but when I was looking at his IMDb, he was in an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and then he was on Dawson's Creek. He's the reason Jen Lindley was sent to Cape Side. He plays the guy who is the reason that Jen is in Dawson's Creek, that she had to leave New York City. And I was like, you're, like, pivotal to the whole show.
Wow.
So I was very amused that, like, you know, these two are exchanging looks across the way, and it's like, who knew we'd be here? What, you know, it's like the Paul Rudd, like, look at us, look at us. Who knew? So yeah.
Sorry, I've mentioned this before. I always think of Ian Bailey from ER. He was on like 15 episodes of ER or something like that. He was Abby's boyfriend for a little while he was like, I think, a medical student or something like that. So, you know, I just find that very funny. That to me, that stands out. You know, that's where I know him from. Mm-hmm. Even though he does look like Paul Rudd, you know, there is a resemblance between them.
I could see that. Yeah, no, I just, and I love, you know, I was looking at Colin Hanks, because to me, I was like, oh yeah, Colin Hanks has been in a lot, and he has, but not as much as I thought. You know, he's just one of those guys, like, whenever he shows up in something, you're like, oh good, you know. he did a bunch of the Drunk History episodes, and when he was in Fargo, you know, it's just like, you're never disappointed when Colin Hanks is on a show.
Well, is that something that's hereditary? You know, in general, would you say the same thing about Tom Hanks?
Well, and I wonder, because there's been a whole discussion, you know, it's funny you mentioned ER, a whole discussion about, like, the Nepo baby thing, because Bryan Cranston's daughter is, like, one of the greatest actresses I've ever seen. She's on The Pit.
Bryan Cranston's daughter's on The Pit?
Taylor Dearden, yes, she's playing Mel King. Dearden wow. is her last name, okay. And
I didn't know that that's his daughter. I'm like,
yeah,
shocked.
She's so good.
Yeah, she was great this season.
Yeah, and so it's and you know, people are joking, like, you know, obviously having a famous dad is not her. You know, Colin Hanks is Tom Hanks's son, very obviously, and yet no one is claiming they only have their careers because of their dads. Like, they're clearly talented themselves.
Very true.
So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Just a fun
no, I'm like totally shocked that's Bryan Cranston's daughter. Because one of the other actresses is, what's his name? Brad. She's the daughter of Wormtongue.
Brad Dourif.
That's right. There you go. Brad Dourif. Right. So I was shocked because apparently I didn't even realize this at the time, but Brad Dourif had a guest spot on the first season of The Pitt.
Oh yeah, because they keep bringing in like basically everyone's like
Yeah,
spouse
this season they had Noah Wyle's wife.
or brother. No, so
Noah Wyle's wife was the woman with the turmeric. You know, she had too much turmeric. Okay, whatever.
yeah. So anyway, shout listeners, if you haven't checked out The Pitt, do. If you are feeling nostalgic for teen shows, some of our favorite heartthrobs are there. But yeah, this show Band of Brothers was such a breakthrough of like prestige television. I feel like this is one of the shows that kind of kicked off that movement
Yeah, I
of when it was like, okay, TV isn't just gonna be something to watch while eating dinner.
correct. I mean,
It's
you
gonna
mentioned at the
be
beginning From the Earth to the Moon. From the Earth to the Moon obviously was there was Hanks and Spielberg's first foray into, you know, into this. Actually, it wasn't Spielberg, was it? It was Hanks. It was Hanks and wasn't it, was Spielberg part of it?
I thought it was, yeah, I think Spielberg's in it, or you know, help make it.
Okay, maybe. But again, From the Earth to the Moon has a lot of famous people in it, but it's not the same way. But very cool. All right, so today's segment is called Band Brand, where my guest will give their top five fictional movie bands.
Yay. All right. Excuse me.
Start
All
with your number
right.
five and work your way up.
Oh, okay. Number five is my most embarrassing. And it's technically two bands, but they sing together. It's from the movie The Chipmunk Adventure, Alvin and the Chipmunks and the Chipettes. Because I went with when I was picking my favorite fictional bands, I was like, who are the bands where I listen to their music as if they're a real band?
Okay.
Like I put
That's
on,
fair.
and the soundtrack to The Chipmunk Adventure has some bangers in it that we were still putting in mixes like when I was in college with my friend. So
And you were doing it in like 72 speed?
no, they're already good. So yeah, the Chipmunk Adventure soundtrack rocks. Number four is Stillwater from Almost Famous. I think that was the first time I was like, wait, is this a real band? No, it's a fake band, but it's a
It's a fake
real,
band based on a
like,
real band.
based on, but also like they had what's her face from Heart, like writing the, like they had a real musician writing real music that was really played, but it's a fake band. And like that's kind of the vibe I was going for when I was making my
Yeah, okay.
list. Number three is a more stereotypical, like, oh, fake band for the show, but The Wonders from That Thing You Do. Just a classic.
Yes. The Oneater, the
Number two,
Oneaters.
The Oneaters. Number two, Daisy Jones and the Six from the TV series. I listen to that soundtrack like it's just in my regular rotation. And then number one, Josie and the Pussycats, specifically the 2001 movie. That soundtrack is amazing.
Oh wow! Okay, there are a lot of people that have chosen Josie and the Pussycats. Very, very interesting. As I always liked the cartoon version of it. I didn't
See,
like the live action movie as well. Yes, the music was good, but the story itself was, in my opinion, terrible.
oh, the story was terrible, but like that CD was my workout CD for all of college, basically. And it's still like I put songs from it in mixes and stuff. So, yeah, it's a really, really listenable to fictional band, fake
Okay.
band, whatever you want to
Okay.
call it.
That makes sense. All right. Excellent. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. So now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie.
All right.
I'm going to randomly spin the wheel, and we're gonna see what movie Tierney gets that she has to try to figure out what it is. So let's spin the wheel. Round and round and round the wheel goes. This is a movie from 1980, and it stars Roger Moore, Gregory Peck, and David Niven.
Oh.
Okay, are you in any? Do you want more information, or?
I need more info. I don't know that there's only so
Basically,
many
it's okay.
movies that come
During this is the IMDb synopsis. During World War II, British intelligence brings a crew of ex-soldiers out of retirement, using their age as cover to take to the seas and pull off an unlikely undercover mission in neutral Goa. It's based on a book called Boarding Party. Trevor Howard is also in it. I don't think there's anybody else here that jumps out. No, not really.
I don't, because I will say I haven't seen it. I don't think I've ever seen any Roger Moore movie, honestly.
Really, even him as 007? You've never seen
But
Cannonball
I'm trying
Run?
to think, because no, I've only seen Connery and
No, what?
Brosnan and now
And I
Craig
know, I'm
and
saying Cannonball Run is not a Bond movie. That's
Oh, yeah.
that's the comedy about the race across America. Oh wow.
But I know, like, when you said those names together, I was like, I remember like the existence of
Okay.
this, but I have no idea what the name of it is because I never actually saw
Okay,
it.
so it is a movie called the Sea Wolves.
Seawolves. That is a great
Yes.
title. Feels like it should be about submariners, but
Well, it's actually it's quite a good movie. Not perfect, but
nice.
it's a fun movie to watch.
I mean, that's a banger of headliners
Yes.
cast,
Yes.
so.
Well, again, all of them were pretty much over the hill at the time, but I think that was part of the idea.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they were looking for, and that's what they got.
There you go.
Exactly. All right. So, Tierney, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Tierney Steele?
Well, Tierney Steele has the website onesteelsister.com. That's onesteelsister. I'm also on Instagram and Threads at that name, but you're mostly just gonna see like pictures of my cat and me talking about Heated Rivalry there. Which, I mean, hey, is a good time. Come on over. Yeah, that's where I am most of the time
All
these
right,
days.
and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, Curry!
Curry!